Yorosho konagashimasu. Hello and welcome to the official NJPW English podcast. And before we get into the episode today, I just want to give a little bit of a programming note, an editor's note, if you will. My name is Walker Stewart. I'll be joined by Chris Charlton momentarily, where you'll be hearing the kickoff. We'll be talking a little bit today in this episode about the passing of Sabu, the legacy of Sabu, what Sabu did in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and a bit of his genesis in professional wrestling overall under his uncle, the Sheik, as well as the real generational impact that Sabu has had on professional wrestling overall, a former IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. And that conversation will then turn us over to a little bit about the midway point of Best of the Super Junior 32. We recorded this episode live in Yoyogi Arena. So if there is a little bit of background noise, if you hear a little bit of rustling and jostling all around, well, that's because we're up in the rafters, folks, and no Sting and no Darby Allin up there with us, but we're up in the rafters and we were making best with what do, as we are currently on the road. I'm on tour currently with New Japan Pro Wrestling, and Chris is bouncing around Tokyo and in and out of the office. So we thought we'd get an episode out for y'all lovely NJPW official English podcast viewers heading into what is going to be the closing moments of Best of the Super Junior 32 in the next few weeks. We'll be talking about Dominion on the next episode, but for now, join us in a conversation about Sabu and Best of the Super Junior 32 and episode 2 of the official NJPW English podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome. We are coming to you live, and not exactly live, but as close to live as you're going to get tonight, from Yoyogi. We're in the midst of Best of the Super Junior, and it's another episode of the NJPW official English podcast. I'm Walker Stewart, alongside what some have referred to as the Lion Mark himself, Chris Charlton.
Who?
A couple people.
You know. Just like literally just now.
Three or four people.
We're right up in the nosebleed seats of Yoyogi. I have said this several times, that there's not a bad seat in this house. Like, this is honestly, if you get the chance to come to Japan and go to, you know, we're in Yoyogi, what, about once or twice a year.
Yeah, right.
But it's like, this is one of my very, very favorite venues. Yeah, I mean, it's the announcer's cliche to say there's not a bad seat in the house, but there's no bad seat in this house.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, we're going to be here today doing Best of the Super Junior. By the time this comes out, I mean, people have already witnessed it live with English coverage on NJPW World, and we're right in the midst of this tournament. But before we talk about Best of the Super Junior, you know, I want to get into it a little bit with you. It's been the talk of the wrestling world, and not for the reason anyone wants it to be. The conversation regarding the impact that Sabu, who has recently passed away, gone from the world, and now forever to live on in the hearts of professional wrestling fans all across, a former IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. And I just want to get into it with you a little bit about the impact Sabu has had on pro wrestling.
Yeah, a lot of people wouldn't think of Sabu as IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. Yeah. It was like a very sort of brief period in 90. So he was there in and out through all of 1995.
Mm.
You know, and like had this, had to deal with Masahiro Chono. But yeah, I mean, I think like everybody has, what was interesting was seeing everybody's reaction to his passing. Mm. And then you kind of get like the, you know, we had a TV meeting last week, and we were talking about, you know, can we get, there were some matches that were put up on the NJPW World Archives for free. And like a couple of those hadn't been digitized yet. So it was like, well, can we get these matches? Can we put them out there? Mm. And somebody made this point, and I think it is true. It's one of the nice things about pro wrestling, but one of the sort of sad things about pro wrestling is that we lose someone like a Sabu, but that sort of gets people into finding out more about them, right? And
right,
finding these little things, finding these bits of footage. And it's, you know, obviously it's one of those, you don't know what you have until it's gone. And we wish that we could do this with all of these people while they are still here, and while we celebrate them while they are still here. But I think what's interesting has been the level of, you know, people's first encounters with Sabu.
Mm.
And they're, you know, and it would go generation to generation. Mm. And your sort of mental image of Sabu is probably very different to mine.
Well, right. Well, because I was, you know, I start watching wrestling. I mean, close your ears if you don't want to feel old, but 2010 is when I first start watching pro wrestling, right? And but going back with the innovation of, like, what was the WWE Network, now Peacock, and all these different archives that are on these streaming services, going back and watching some prime ECW, I do have this vision of Sabu, not in New Japan Pro Wrestling, not from his time in WCW, but his time in ECW, and then more so vividly his time during the brief revival of ECW under WWE, 05, 06, 07, right?
Right.
And, you know, some of the matches that he had had on some of those one-night stand pay-per-views, matches against John Cena. Like, it's a very recent vision of Sabu all the way to basically what he was doing up to the time of his passing on the modern American independent circuit, right? You know, the famed stories of Sabu showing up and either going balls to the walls crazy in some of his independent appearances, or maybe not even showing up at all, but that leaving the promotion with definitely a story or two to tell, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, with everything, probably, you know, I mean, it was one of those other things that I think, like, Taz put it very well, and, like, obviously Taz knew him so well, but, like, the idea that he was people, aura is a word that gets so overused, and, like, as a result it gets, like, abused as well, but, like, I think with Sabu the word is mystique,
yeah,
right? And he carried a mystique, and it meant that everything he did was sort of was part of that layer of mystique, you know, because he was on this one end of things, this terrifying, psychopathic, you know, Hannibal-like creature, right? But on the other hand, like, he was equal parts that as he was Wile E. Coyote, you know, like, and I think, like, the level of, like, surely he hasn't thought this through, because he hadn't, right? And, like, that is physically impossible. It's never going to happen. And most of the times it didn't happen. But when when it did happen, it was so incredible. And it was like one of those times where every now and then, if you could imagine the Wile E. Coyote getting the Roadrunner, right? And you see that once in five, one in four, one in three times. Like, that was such a hook, and such a, you know, there was so much intrigue of him walking the tightrope a lot of the times, and you didn't know whether he was gonna fall, and oftentimes he did fall, right? But, like, that only added to who Sabu was. My first time watching Sabu was, like, my first ECW show was, like, the real ones in the UK, remember, with, like, the end of ECW, the sort of last couple of years. They had, like, a DVD, probably one of the first DVD deals, like, in sort of certainly UK wrestling circles. Like, I feel they were faster on it than, say, WWF was at the time, actually. Or at least, like, they were more producing more, I guess, right? And so, like, yeah, the ECW Living Dangerously 99 was, like, an early DVD of mine. Like, and still probably one of the best ECW shows. Like, Rob Van Dam and Jerry Lynn. There was, like, a New Jack and Mustafa there. Like, so there was, like, every sort of little bit of our friend Steve Corino getting walloped. You know, like, yeah. Joey Styles saying, like, the best thing that Joey Styles has ever said. And, like, and I think I've told you this story. Like, it's super crazy, and it's Tajiri. And it'll loop back to us calling Tajiri, which is a real thrill, at Dontaku. So, super crazy and Tajiri. And super crazy goes up for a springboard, slips, misses, and, you know, and Tajiri, you know, quick as a flash, it takes control of the match or whatever. But Super Crazy slips and misses, and Joey Styles, in a heartbeat, goes, "Well, it's been raining all day outside the Anaheim Arena, and the top rope is pretty slippery," which I think is tremendous.
Right.
But it was like, yeah, the Sabu and Taz match, which was right after Sabu broke his jaw. And that was the story of the match, was like Taz using these cross faces to take away Sabu's jaw. So I came into the Sabu and Taz feud, like, kind of late, and then went back and watched Barely Legal via Beyond the Mat as well, right? And that sort of aspect of it. But, like, that was so important to what ECW became. But he was, to me, the very example of what an international excursion should be to people, you know. And I think, like, a lot of people don't know. So everybody knows that he was trained by his uncle, the Sheik, right?
Right.
And, like, the Sheik had done a bunch of stuff in Japan. He'd actually done a month with New Japan, believe it or not, back in 74 or so. And then, like, he was doing IWE, and he worked a lot for Baba through the 80s. And then he was, you know, obviously very sort of known for bleeding and doing a lot of blood and guts stuff and being in the Aptamax, like, through the 80s and stuff like that. Trained Rob Van Dam, trained his nephew, who, like, I think Sabu told the story, like, you know, he never wanted Sabu to be in the business, right? Mm-hmm. But then sort of to try and stop him from being part of the wrong crowd, I'll take you in, start your training, right? Sabu and Rob Van Dam were doing, like, all of this crazy stuff, you know, when they were training. And then Sabu got his start in the mid-80s on the territories, being very sort of technical, being a very sort of traditional, technically minded wrestler, right? And then the Sheik was still getting called to Japan. When FMW started in 91, Sheik was in their tag league. And so the tag league gimmick was the Sheik was going to bring in his nephew, you know, Sabu, right? Sabu was like working as like Terry SR or something, like the Sheik's, the Sheik's Revenge or the Sheik's Return was like, you know. And then like the story is like Sheik goes to Sabu on the plane right over, because like, I mean, Sheik's getting up there, right? Hardly very mobile, can't really do as much. And he says to Sabu on the flight, all of that crazy stuff you and Rob were doing, you know, that I said don't do, make sure you do it.
Mm.
You know, and then, like, everything takes off with him in FMW. And his thing with New Japan, like, he goes straight into the Tokyo Dome and gets that massive shove, like, a huge exposure off the gate, January 4th, 95. Mm. And this was just as Chono was starting this soft turn into what Masahiro Chono became.
Right.
Like, I think, like, you, I mean, if you, you coming back to the archives late, like, there must be, like, this big disconnect of your image of who Masahiro Chono is to then seeing early Masahiro Chono, right?
Yeah, there's a dissonance there for sure.
Like, he's, like, those three musketeers, you have Hashimoto, who's, like, this brick hit house ass kicker, right? You have Keiji Muto, who's like good looking, and then you have the other, the great Muta sort of counter effect to that. And then you had Masterno, who was like, he was a really solid, really good, fundamentally sound wrestler, right? And he wins the G1s, those for like three of the first four, but never IWGP champion. And you're kind of thinking, where does he, you know, stop this if it seems familiar with people we know now?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it was 95, 96 is when, like, he gets involved with Masa Saito, starts to turn, becomes, like, the Black Charisma, NWO, and all of that. But the first start was he was in the G1 Tag League with Junji Hirata, who is, like, people would know as a Super Strong Machine.
Mm.
And he turns on Hirata, like, in the, like, the last match of the league. That then, in December, leads to, like, the single match of Chono versus Hirata, during which Sabu makes the run in, right, and does all the Sabu stuff, and then like he's this surprise tag partner, and it was Chono and Sabu against Hirata and Fujinami,
okay,
which is a wild thing. And then like it goes into, you know, and then that May he won the junior title from Koji Kanemoto, and that's on Worlds, and that's like a, that's a fantastic match, because you get a little bit of everything. Where it's like the first few minutes of that match, Sabu is like looking for a single leg and he's sneaking in, and like, and then, you know, Sabu sort of points to the ceiling. The moment he does, like, Kanemoto just like fucking corks him, like this massive open right. And then it starts getting crazy from there. It's like a real something of everything. And like, I think people don't know how, people who came to Sabu or would see the clips and would see the sound bites of Sabu wouldn't necessarily know what a versatile athlete he was.
Right. Well, you know, you talk about the versatility of Sabu, and you use the word, Taz used the word aura on AEW, which, we talked about earlier. But when you talk about the word mystique, and then you make that connection from Sabu to the Sheik, I mean, that mystique element was something that played into the Sheik's persona as well, and very much passed down generationally, you could call it, from the uncle to the nephew. And now, I mean, we have the Sabu that we had in front of us in professional wrestling. And I think that, you know, now more than ever, as you said earlier on, like, people are going to be singing the praises of what a generational star Sabu was. And we don't talk about star in the word of making the most money, certainly not in ECW, right? You don't talk about star in terms of highest in-ring acumen, but when you talk about creating something and creating something that leaves an indelible impression in professional wrestling, Sabu is one of those individuals who managed to do that. I don't believe there is a wrestler alive today that is active in the American independent scene, active in WWE, AEW, New Japan, whatever, that does not take inspiration from some form of Sabu that we have seen before, and whether they know it or not, you know, Sabu is that one.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, like, as I've been there and calling the lot, you know, I think people are more conscious of people that are passed, you know, and then you see more of these tributes. But obviously, like, watching and doing the Best of the Super Juniors, but seeing someone like a Titan, like, who's very, very obviously openly influenced and does the same, has always done the same mannerisms.
Right, and with that being said, you know, we just want to invite people to go ahead and check out the description of this podcast episode today for what is set to be the GoFundMe link that will be placed in for the Celebrate Sabu, a Wrestling Legends Farewell GoFundMe. You can read the description, see what you are going to be putting your money toward and support, but I know that I already have put my own donation in for the burial of Sabu, as after Sabu has done so much to uplift professional wrestling itself. It is the only true way that any of us can find a way to pay back, other than keeping the man's memory and legacy alive, which, well, I think Sabu has done well more than enough to deserve having that legacy kept alive in totality. Not to mention, of course, you know, we want to draw highlight as well to the Sabu matches that are available right now up until May 21st for free on NJPW World. They're still going to be on the platform following May 21st, but, you know, free viewership for anyone who is not a NJPW World subscriber. That is a Koji Kanemoto versus Sabu, which Chris mentioned earlier on in the podcast, for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title back from Wrestling Dontaku in 1995. There's Jushin Thunder Liger versus Sabu, a personal favorite of mine from G1 Climax in 1995, as well as that tag team combination that was mentioned earlier on in the evening, Junji Hirata and Tatsumi Fujinami taking on Sabu and Masahiro Chono in that Super Hard Syndrome tag team matchup, 1995's January 4th Tokyo Dome. Just great matches to go out of your way to witness. And with all that being said, we dedicate this episode of the official NJPW English podcast to the memory of Sabu, the suicidal, homicidal, genocidal maniac that is the legend Sabu.
So, Chris, you know, the reason that we are in Yoyogi, the fans don't know that we're there from what they're seeing. They're not seeing anything. This is a podcast. I don't know if you heard.
You've got to paint a word picture. That is what some people would say our job is.
Sure. Okay. Well, you know, circular venue is Yoyogi. Mm. Brown paneling, much like Ota City, actually, which I really enjoy about Ota.
Right.
Ota has that brown paneling along the walls as well. It is an arena vibe tonight. And Best of the Super Junior continues here in Yoyogi. It's going to have happened, and fans will have already paid attention to the results and seen it live on NJPW World with English coverage by the time they're hearing this. But, you know, in the midst of Best of the Super Junior, from the point that we're at right now, I mean, there's a lot to dive into, I feel, already. And we're only going into night five is what we're going to be broadcasting here today on NJPW World.
Like, when it's like there's the two blocks and then there's the one block and then there was the we had the split tour, so then the math of, like, which day is it? Like, in general, which day is it is always, like, a challenge.
Right, yeah.
And then you go, yeah, because I think probably when people listen to this, it'll be round about night 7, night 8, Umo, Osaka, around that sort of phase. So we'll be well into maybe past the midway point, but we're now through the first third as we're talking. And yeah, I think we've gotten the feel. I thought it might be fun, right? If we each chose, and we haven't consulted beforehand,
okay,
but, like, pick an MVP from each block. In theory, then if we choose differently, we'll have four people. Mm. So we can go semis, finals, and then we'll figure out, and we'll say right now who's going to be, you know, because well, you guys at home will have a clearer picture. And then by June 1st, you know, where the finals are in OTA and NJPW Worlds, you'll be able to check out our math, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see how we do. Okay, so, well, you know, if we're talking MVP, right, like they're... I think it's clear to make the distinction on what you're basing that off of, right? Because if you generally, I feel like your MVP would just be the top of each block, and then you kind of would go from there. And I feel like there's certainly a cause for conversation when it comes to Kosei Fujita being on my list in Block A. 6 points at this point in the tournament. It might add 8 here tonight, or another 2 to make 8, or might be beaten for the first time in Best of the Super Junior this year. I'm interested to see what Kosei Fujita is, and I think he could make it into my personal Final Four.
Yeah, I think, like, Fujita, you have... obviously, the Hiromu match was so big for him, and that win, and, like, and how hard he was hit by Hiromu, you know, and I think it was something that rang through to me. It felt like Hiromu trying to chop through the chest to get to his heart and crush it, you know, right. Like, that was... And yeah, I think the other thing, you know, using that thrill ride move that he's come up with.
Yeah.
And I don't think you would ever think, like, you look at a guy like Kosei Fujita, you wouldn't think that he would have what is effectively, if you haven't seen it, like a burning hammer into an F5, essentially, right? It's a very power move. And, like, what I always love seeing power juniors, what we call them, right? Junior heavyweight frame that do a lot of power, right? And people would think Clark Connors or, like, Driller Maloney up to the point of last year. But when my sort of image of a power junior going back 2 or 3 years ago in Super Juniors was El Linderman.
Oh, right? Yes.
And the point that I always come up with is power to weight ratio, right? It's like a sports car, right? The minimizing the weight, maximizing the power, that sort of min-max aspect of it is what's really intriguing, what makes a really good power junior, in my view. And Kosei Fujita, as a power junior, is a really interesting prospect. It's another sort of dynamic to him, another side to him. And also, yeah, the confidence that he's had, the mental sort of wherewithal that he's had, the fact that he's wrestling like a top guy right now, I think that he, you know, is pretty clear to see, you know, in my opinion. But I think that, you know, conversely, I think probably somebody with a very similar mental mindset, my MVP for A block is Francesco Acchi.
Yes, yeah.
And one of my favorite unsung moments of Best Super Juniors, right? And when it comes to guys locking in, I think people of your generation, I've heard a lot of talk of locking in.
Right.
And I'm not sure how to lock oneself in.
Sure.
But I have thought I should really try to lock in one of these days. I'm not sure what it is or how to do it.
You'll figure it out. I mean,
but I think so the thing for me with locking in, and like everybody's talking about that incredible ninja mat, the Super Sasuke special, the Super Ninja special. Millions and millions of views, Barstool Sports, ESPN, Pat McAfee, like everything, right? But like the difference of how locked in Francesco Acura is. The next night, we're in Korakuen Hall. Ninja Mac up top goes for a ninja bomb. Acura counters it, does the Franken off the top. Ninja Mac flips out of it, lands on his feet, right? And of course, like, fantastic. Everybody, whoa. And like, Ninja Mac takes the time to look out at the crowd. Like, you know, that's another viral moment for Ninja Mac. In the meantime, Francesco Acura stands up, bang, blasts him with a fireball, back of the head, beats him. Like, that is locked in.
Right. And I think that's something that really plays to the growth we've seen of Francesco Acura. I think when you look back at Acura's first Best of the Super Junior run, you might have seen him have a little bit of that headlight look the way that Mac did, you know, soaking in his own moment. But Acura, I mean, not coming to play in this year's Best of the Super Junior, and I think that that's just one of the many moments that you could point to where Akira has been quote-unquote locked in, as you'll say. You know, there was the opening night match that we saw with Francesco Acura and You know, had a lot of opportunities, I feel, to do, and I feel I've been saying this throughout this tournament when it comes to Akira on social media, a lot of opportunities to do the flashier things, to take the extra step, to go the extra mile, and not exactly cutting corners as Francesco Akira, not by a long shot, but to be able to go about things the way that Akira has shows just a bit of a different drive and focus than I feel we've seen out of Akira in a tournament's past. And I feel like every single time Francesco Akira is in one of these high major big match singles situations, whether it be the junior heavyweight title that fit at the 53rd anniversary, whether it be a marquee best of the super junior match like he had with Hiromu Takahashi back in Korakuen Hall, we continue to see Akira level up, and it might very well place him, even with Fujita at 6 points on the list. If you're putting Fujita against Akira, in my mind, it might put Akira a little bit of the ways up.
B-Block then. I think B-Block, like, the big surprise for me at B-Block is, you know, not in the MVP situations. You know, it would be Kevin Knight who dropped his first three. Hopefully, for Kevin Knight's sake, you know, when we get round to it later on, you know, in the week, we'll be, or, you know, when we reconvene, he'll have sort of researched. And I think sometimes there are situations where you look at an athlete who goes down, drops the first few, has that self wake up call, and then gets right up there in the mix towards the end. Mm. And that might be the case with Kevin Knight. But conversely, you know, your pick for.
Yeah, you know, I think it would be easy to go with the top point scorer, but I think I'm going to go a very different direction here. It shocks me that, and in much the way we're talking about Kevin Knight, I personally can't put El Desperado on my MVP list for very similar reasons. 1-2 record going into tonight and dropping that loss to Taiji Ishimori and Korakuen Hall. I have to go with Mao.
Ooh.
And Mao has been one of my favorite performers to watch in this year's tournament. Two and one record at the time of recording this. Surely, I mean, we know for a fact that's going to change in about a few hours as of the time we record this. But
one way or another,
indeed. And it wouldn't shock me to go to see Mao, you know, having taken, the first loss that he did and go, all right, well, no more then. And
have you ever seen a man as square?
Square, blocky.
Some Minecraft character.
Yeah, Jack Black style. You know, that's round and square. I mean, different. You know, we could, Mao and I could talk about that all day. Sure. But, you know, Mao is, one of those names that I, as someone who, you talk about relative newness to, watching the Japanese independent scene and checking out things like DDT on the rare occasion I get the opportunity to take a breath from our own product, right? Mm. And, Mao's just one of those names that I had heard so much about and never had the true opportunity to sit down and absorb. And then heading into my research for Best of the Super Junior this year and getting to see what Mao is capable of a DDT style and variety, which is, it can be very different at times than that of New Japan Pro Wrestling and what you see in Best of the Super Junior. There's a lot of lines I'm seeing crossed with DDT and Mao, and now Mao in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I think that those lines are being drawn phenomenally so, by the strange love connection, as he is known. And I'm interested to see what Mao does going forward. I think that he has all the potential in the world to be a top point scorer by the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think, it's tempting. It was tempting for you to say Nick Wayne. It would be tempting for me to say Nick Wayne because he was 3-0 going in. I think, like, sometimes you see guys run until the wheels fall off, especially when they're making their debuts. Very often, like, guys come in on their first tournament, something like this, and they'll go either 0-3 and 0-4, you know, because they're on eggshells, they're a little bit unsure of themselves, or they'll go so hard that they'll go 3-0, 4-0, and then fall down during the stretch. And obviously, like, Nick Wayne, really, really impressive wins. And one thing, you know, I think that's impressive, and you could say the same of Mao as well, and you could say the same of my actual pick of MVP for B-Block, which is T-Tan. But a lot of guys winning in different ways. And I think, you know, with Nick Wayne, 3 wins, 3 different moves to do it. Same with Mao, he's got that EI kick. You know, he had that, the Rinkan upper. He's got other finishes as well, right? And I think like that's keeping a lot of the audience on their toes. It's keeping a lot of the competitors on their toes as well. We really don't know when a finish is going to come. You know, and I think that's something that's fairly unique to Best of the Super Juniors as well. But yeah, I mean, I think maybe recency bias as the guy that just beat Mal, but Titan, and the ability to surprise is something that Titan always has. And I think easily player of the night, player of the tournament so far was the counter that Titan had to the combo kick that Mal threw. Slick, the smoothest as butter transition into Yabe Immortal that was just phenomenal, just absolutely sensational. And yeah, I think Titan at a point where he was a finalist 2 years ago didn't quite make that conversation last year. You know, I think he would likely be in the mix, in my opinion, towards the end this year, which means so we've got Mao and Titan in B block,
right?
Akira and Fujita in B, in A rather, right? So if you went, if I said Francesco Acura or Mal, who would you pick?
Wow. I mean, you know, you'd be more the historian on this aspect, but like a a DDT wrestler, for instance, winning Best of the Super Junior sounds definitely out of character, and while Mal is in many ways out of character, right? Mm. So I think it'd be really hard to bet against Mal in that situation, Chris. I can't lie.
Yeah, I like the fire that Acura has at the moment. Just the drive is hard to beat. But like on the other side of things, if you went, Titan or Fujita, I want to say in terms of pure want to, Fujita.
I'd argue in a pure need to, it's going to be Titan. Titan without Los Ingobernables now. Titan very much in a position where he is only here to solely represent Consejo, only solely represent CMLL. And, you know, to win Best of the Super Junior, I think that's a lot more of a guarantee that you're going to be over here in a country where Titan has very much cut his teeth, loves to compete here just as much as he loves to compete in Mexico. I think that in a need to win situation, should that be a final that we see, which there is very much the possibility for, I think Titan would have to be my choice.
Okay, so if I give you Titan and I'll keep my Acura, Francesco Acura versus Titan, do you first?
God. Oh my gosh. Oh man.
And last time Titan was in a final in Ota, loses to Master Wato. I don't know, man. I think Titan and Acura, I might think Titan.
Right. I mean, I don't know. Like, then now you got me betting against Titan. I don't like how you're doing this, Chris. You're messing with my mind.
Yeah. You're not allowed to say. That's part of the job description. You're
I think I'd have to stick with Titan. I have to stick with my boy, mi amigo. Mm.
Right, so it's your job to be the host, but it sounds like we've locked in on Titan winning versus if
you... Well, I mean, you know, at this point in the juncture, there's so much that is happening within Best of the Super Junior. Of course, results as we're talking about them will have changed potentially dramatically heading into the night that we're heading into with Best of the Super Junior, depending on this episode's release, right? Yeah. And so, all that we know is that there is nothing that is set in stone truly when it comes to Best of the Super Junior. Anyone at this point of recording still alive in tournament action, and we very well could be seeing anyone in the main event of June 1st in Ota for the Best of the Super Junior 32 finals. And that's going to be what's coming up on NJPW World.
June the 1st is the finals. And it doesn't matter if you're if you're listening to this on the plane as you are heading over to Japan for your holidays, you can get tickets wherever you are in the world. It's very, very easy. NJPW1972.com. There's a banner that says Japanese events. Click on that. Get your tickets. About 2-3 clicks. And you'll be there in Ota. We would love to have you. We would also love to have you June the 15th, Dominion, Osaka-jo Hall. That's obviously the big end to the first half of the year. And I guess next time we reconvene, Walker. We'll go a little bit more in depth on Dominion, but already, what, six matches that we have announced so far,
yeah,
kind of says, like, absolutely jam-packed all over, right?
Yeah, it's going to be an incredible time. We know that it's only going to get bigger as Best of the Super Junior comes to a close on June 1st, and we get right into Dominion season. Right after that, we're on the road to New Japan Seoul. We're on the road to G1 Climax. So much left to happen in the year of 2025, and it's going to be you and I calling all the action live. As much as possible, as much as humanly possible, with English coverage on NJPW World. So thank you all for listening to the official NJPW English podcast. For Chris Charlton, I've been Walker Stewart. This has been New Japan Pro Wrestling, the King of Sports.